Thank you. Thanks for doing this. Very informative. Thank you to all the speakers. Ali, you mentioned the linear technology synergies, 300 basis points, of help, starting in 19. Was that an opportunity, or are you basically saying that you can grow mid-single digits with the linear synergies? You can now get to maybe.
No, what I'm saying is the incremental. So we've, based on how we think about, if you just took the two companies and combined them and did nothing else to leverage the sales channel, did nothing else to leverage distribution, we think we can grow this business at a mid-single digit rate. If we do get those revenue synergies, then we should grow better than that.
Okay. And then as my follow-up, you didn't mention M&A at all in this presentation.
Yep.
I was hoping you can elaborate a little bit on that, and
yep.
especially focusing a little bit on, what are some of the metrics that you guys look at internally, especially returns metrics for an M&A. Thank you.
Yeah, good question, Tore. Yeah, so we've got our hands full right now, integrating LTC, so that's our priority. But we're all the time scanning. We have a kind of a two-pronged M&A strategy. We've done a lot of tuck-in acquisitions over the last several years, and we'll continue to look for those opportunities. Those are kind of further out, typically. These are more technologies that are synergistic with the strategy of the company, like the LiDAR thing we talked about. So we will continue to do those. But everything we've presented here today is really about the combination. It's organic. It's about ADI and LTC together, and that's what we're basing this entire model on from here.
Thanks. A question about the leverage.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the plan is to get to two turns, but after that, continue to pay down debt. And I just want to make sure I understand, you're going to be, with that capital allocation strategy, you're going to get below two turns, and should go down presumably to zero over time. I mean, I know you have some very long-term debt. But how do you think about that relative to reducing your total cost of capital, maximizing shareholder value from the balance sheet perspective? Why not keep some debt? Is sort of what I'm getting
Yeah,
at.
so let me let me try and attack that. Maybe Vince can add as well if he'd like. But I think, as we're, we just did this we just completed the acquisition a few months ago. This is our current thinking. We think we can pay this debt down. And again, remember, $5 billion was term loan. The remainder, of the $3.9 billion is still going to remain on the balance sheet for 5, 7, 10, 20, 30 years. I think we're probably going to keep some leverage on the balance sheet, no doubt. The other thing I'd tell you is, as we get into the 80% to 100% free cash flow return, we still intend to have our current free cash flow generation model, where a third of the cash flow gets generated onshore and two-thirds gets generated offshore. So as a result, if you're returning 80% to 100%, by virtue of doing that, you would see some of the leverage building up on the U.S. balance sheet.
Question here. Harlan Sur with J.P. Morgan. Thank you for putting on this presentation today. With the $1 billion of annualized synergies starting 2019, obviously, I'm sure you guys have put a lot of thought into this. Can you help us understand sort of, I know some of the design cycles are a lot longer for certain segments. So help us understand over the next few years where we start to see the synergies starting to roll in from an end market perspective.
Yeah, good question. So clearly, let's say the ones that are more tangible right now are in automotive, for example, where we talked about a little earlier on, the combination of LT's power with our advanced driver assistance radar technology, LiDAR, of course. So I think in terms of being able to get to a ramp rate in a predictable as things can be, I think that's clearly one. There may be some areas of consumer where we have the product and technology where we can, create attach with, in attractive opportunities. I would say as well in the communications infrastructure area, in 5G systems, massive MIMO, where, as I think with Steve or Greg talked about, there's a huge amount of the radio board space today consumed by power. So that's a big opportunity for us, given the advanced power systems that we can bring to play. So I think those are the big ones, the big tangible ones. And then, you know, when it comes to industrial, it's hundreds of applications, many hundreds of different products. That will probably, and just given the ramp cycles as well, that'll probably take a bit longer.
Thank you.
Yep, Ross.
Thanks, Ali. A couple quick ones for you. On the free cash flow return, one of your bigger competitors has set a really high bar with that 100%. It's good to see you guys hitting up against that theoretical limit as well. One advantage they tend to have is a lot of that cash is actually onshore, so you don't have to repatriate things. Mm-hmm. Historically, that's not been the case with either you or Linear. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about where your cash flow is generated and maybe even talk a little bit about the tax rate that the company will pay over time?
Yeah, I think I answered part of that when I answered Will's question. We have generated about a third of our cash onshore, two-thirds offshore. I think that'll continue to be the case. From a tax rate perspective, we've guided to a combined company tax rate of 15%. And so I think that'll continue to be the case as well. You know, it's an interesting philosophical question. You know, do you get the higher tax rate and all the cash, or do you not? Do the opposite. I like what we're doing because I think it offers a pretty nuanced and a pretty rational and a reasonable approach to it. We like having a competitive tax rate. You know, I think as we've shown, we've had the ability to either raise debt in the U.S. or in the case of acquisitions to use our global cash reserves to pay for deals and do that in an efficient way. So I'm not keeping score, by the way. I don't know. You guys are running the Q&A, so keep it fair.
I had a question on the consumer business, and thanks to Yusuf for putting it in perspective on why you should be investing. Seems like you should be, given the ROI chart he had. I just wanted to get it back to more medium term over maybe the next 1 year, year and a half. And Ali, tying it back to the presentation you had, you said the adder would be large volume consumer wins. I'm usually the last one to find out, but sounds like you don't have anything. So would it be prudent post the next fiscal year we should all have zero in that adder that you had up there? Thank you.
I don't know if it'll be zero, but I think the way to think about it is, I think, and we talked about it a little bit on the earnings call a couple of weeks ago, I think we're probably going to be in a period of slower growth in the consumer market. And my sense is that 2018 is probably going to continue that weakness. And, you know, I've seen people put out notes of, you know, down 20 to 30%. I mean, that's probably as good as any other number out there because we frankly just don't have the visibility. But the consumer business is likely to be down next year. On the flip side, all of the earnings related to that particular market should be replaced by earnings from the acquisition. And so you're taking away consumer EPS, replacing it with industrial and automotive type EPS. And so 2 points is, one is, you know, kind of this notion of EPS replacement. The other notion I talk about is just simply by doing that, your mix of B2B markets just expands. And, you know, I think for investors, that warrants a higher valuation from what I hear.
But, you know, I think it's very hard to predict consumer in a short period of time. But I think it's reasonable to assume we can grow that business at mid-single digits for a long period of time, just given the mix of businesses that we have. As Yusuf said, you know, we've got this more B2B part of consumer that is very fragmented in terms of products and customers, highly profitable. You know, the portable part is the piece where the volatility is stronger. So, but I think that's the way to look at it, rather than trying to predict what it's going to be in the short term. Over the, you know, kind of medium long term, even without some of the bigger, more portable oriented things we're working on, mid-single digits is a reasonable target, I think.
Vince Overt, a couple of questions. Yeah. I'll blame this question as a reflection of some of the questions I'm getting from your investors and owners, but a couple things. First, observation, you must be so concerned about hitting the original synergy targets for the deal that upping them by $100 million just to raise the bar and make life more difficult for you. But that being said, you know, Bob Swanson did lead the board in relative short order, and I think there's a lot of investors out there who look at that data point as perhaps the integration's not going that well. So maybe your commentary around that departure and any update on the CFO search would be helpful.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Well, I think in terms of Bob Swanson, you know, what we put in the 8K is that was written by Bob. So I've nothing more to say really than that. You know, Bob remains very, very interested in the combined company, and obviously the legacy that he's built. And you know, he's offered to be available at any time to offer advice and wisdom. And I have a connection with Bob, as many others have. So there's really nothing more to say than that. You know, I think Bob is at a point in his life as well where he said, you know, I've built a great company. I've been deeply involved for 36 years, and it's time to do something different. So I think it was very much a personal decision with Bob. In terms of the CFO search, again, I don't have much to say beyond what I said at the earnings call a few weeks ago, but we're making very good progress in terms of the search. And, you know, what I had said at the outset is that I expect to have a very, very good solution in place by the end of the fiscal year. I'm hoping it'll be sooner, but I'm sticking by that. So I think we'll have a very, very good answer. And what I can tell you as well is that you look at the quality of the staff we've got in the financial team, in accounting, financial planning, treasury, IR. You know, we've got depth in this company. And, you know, we're well on track in terms of the integration activity. You know, we have tremendous consistency there. The people who worked on the integration of Hittite or the people who are working on the program management of the LTC integration as well. So things are working well, John.
Oh, we've got okay. The mic is there.
Sorry, thanks. I guess two questions. One on the incremental $100 million of synergies that you guys are talking about. Could you just talk about this? Is that really manufacturing synergies, and what's the split, I guess, from OpEx versus COGS for that incremental $100 million?
Well, I think, look, I mean, it's 3 to 5 years out. We have a pretty good sense of where it's going to come from, but I think it's premature to talk about it. But I think the way we're thinking about it is the $100 million is a good number to use over the next 3 to 5 years. And I think over the next few quarters, as we get our thinking around the exact splits, we'll be sure to update you.
Got it. I guess if I could just follow up the last analyst day you guys did a few years back, the discussion was free cash flow EPS growth of 8 to 15%. I think today it's 8 to 12 despite the linear integration. Yeah. So why is the high end getting taken down?
Yeah, I'll answer that. So one point I'll make is we delivered on that. Okay. The other point I'd make is when we gave the model at the last analyst day, we were talking about a 2 to 3 times GDP growth rate top line. You know, just a very high-level growth rate number without a lot of context. I think what we've given to you today is just a tremendous amount of context around how to think about the growth rate for the company. So at a mid-single-digit growth rate overall, we're not growing 3 times GDP, right? So it's a hedged-down number, I guess, from that perspective. So there's nothing that's changed. It should actually be better. You know, you can run the math in your model. But 2 to 3 times GDP at that point in time was 6 to 9%. And now we're talking mid-single-digit growth rate. Apples to apples is actually, I would think, better, to your point.
But we will not constrain ourselves to 12.
Yeah. It's a good question, the one that we did contemplate as a Q&A prep before we came in, because we knew somebody would ask that question.
All right. Just a question regarding Linear and how you intend to operate it differently. And I think... you know, some might have said in the past, perhaps Linear would have grown the top line faster had they taken a different approach. Consumers, one example, right? It sounds like you are willing to take a different approach. Is that a situation where perhaps, you know, some of the business you take from Linear would be lower gross margin, you know, accretive to operating margin going forward? How should we think of that? And, you know, what sort of pieces of business will you take that perhaps the Linear management team would not take going forward?
Yeah, I think number one, when you talk about margins, the markets in which you play largely determine what kinds of margins you can get, you know, what the extremity of that is, and then the quality of the innovation that you're putting in place. So I think, you know, clearly we are focused across the portfolio. We're saying, you know, that financial model will govern our decisions ultimately. But there will be a mix of margins that we can take in different markets with different kinds of products and different applications. But the end result will hit this target. So what people are going to be focused on is think about growth and operating margin first and foremost. And, you know, if we do that, in the markets in which we play, we'll be able to hit the targets in this P&L. So we will be flexible in that respect.
And the other point I would make is, if you remember, Linear Tech on a standalone basis had 45% operating margins at a $1.5 billion revenue run rate. If we execute, like I know we're going to be able to execute over the next 3 to 5 years, the combined company will have, I'm hoping, 45% operating margins at a vastly higher revenue base. So that's what we're driving towards, is revenue growth, profitability, driving operating margins higher, driving free cash flow.
Can I ask a quick follow-up?
Sure.
Yeah, just in, on the way to that target model, how do you manage your OPEX then? Because you're making assumption in mid-single-digit growth rate. It doesn't include some of the revenue synergies you might get.
It doesn't, right.
Right. Yeah. So you know, how should we expect OPEX to grow during that period? You know, recognize that OPEX comes first and the revenue growth comes
later. Well, we have a rule of thumb, you know, that we don't grow OPEX more at more than half the rate of growth. That's a rule of thumb.
So, I mean, I think that the takeaway is, Chris, look, you know, we've been in this business, we've been in this industry a long time. We know how to manage the business. I think the takeaway is simply, look, the OPEX is going to lag revenue growth, and it should provide stellar leverage through the model. And at the end of the day, it is about driving op margins and free cash flow margins. So how we get there, leave it to us, in a sense. Like, we'll manage that. But it's really, at the end of the day, about driving operating margins and free cash flow margins. If I can come to you 3 to 5 years from now, Chris, and tell you, we're now a, I don't know, $6, $7 billion revenue company at 45% operating margins. We essentially took the best of both. Linear had stellar margins, and we've converted that to a much larger company. So I think that'd be a great result for investors.
Hey guys, so question for actually Yusuf. Yusuf, you put up a slide talking about 10% R&D for your business. Is that the target for your business? In other words, compared to, you know, whatever it is, 18, 19% for ADI, you spend 10% in your business, or is that what you spend as a percentage of the total R&D budget?
So the way I like to look at it is, you know, whatever number you pick, if it's 8%, 10%, 12%, the core thesis behind it is laser focus on the business. And that focus provides the filter to let only the most difficult problems come through, bubble through to the top. So as we look at it, we've really put that governor on 10% of the consumer sales to invest in that business. And the reason for that is to bring a level of discipline into it. We could spend a lot more, but like I talked about, we don't want to, because we want to take only the parts of the business that are high value and that are very sticky.
Thanks for that clarification. And one for you guys. So 80 to 100% of free cash flow to be returned to the shareholders. Why not keep some of it back? You've had some tremendous acquisition. Hittite, you were talking about the success there, talking about Linear Tech. Would it not make sense to talk about another Linear Tech in 5 years rather than give the cash back?
Well, I mean, I think we're focused right now on two things, okay? We're focused on integrating this acquisition to the best of our abilities. We're focused on deleveraging the balance sheet to the best of our abilities. As far as we can tell, those are the two things we're focused on. And so as we stretch out to the next 3 to 5 years, that's as best we can tell you, is that we've got this model to return the free cash flow number that we just gave you.
And there aren't many Linear Techs out there.
So how are we doing, folks? People getting hungry? Not yet.
Just a quick follow-up question for Yusuf on the consumer business. You talked about taking IP developed in consumer and kind of trying to leverage that into other end markets. But when you look at some of your largest consumer customers, the Cupertino customer, the Googles, the Amazons, you could make the argument that they're starting to broaden out their own sort of activities outside of what was traditionally maybe just mobile. So how important is it for the consumer business to be engaged with these large customers to try to drive opportunities as those larger customers go out and do more things?
See, ADI's strength is its diversity. Now, it's diversity of technology, diversity of markets, diversity of customers. I won't comment on specific customers, but the whole world is changing. What we call consumer, you know, by the time we're done with the definition changes. So the way we're looking at it is, which are the applications and the problems that drive development of technology at an accelerated pace? And who are the customers that are at the leading edge of that? And that's where we engage, and that's where we play.
Yeah, I actually also had a question. Maybe I can ask it a little bit differently. So when it comes to consumer business, do you actually try and anticipate, you know, what your customers are going to be working on, and you spend a lot of effort there, or are you more waiting for them to come to you and say, hey, you know, we're looking at this industrial design, you know, can you help us out? Because I think from our perspective, even though you kind of quantify the R&D, it's still difficult for us to fully capture, you know, how much you're actually investing in your customers' roadmaps from an R&D perspective.
Yeah, so I think the second part of your choice, which is customers, we take something that we've done and go to customers and, you know, see what they want. That's a much more reactive mode. And, you know, while maybe in some instances that might happen, our dominant strategy is to really tie back to those megatrends that I talked about, because that is what's driving even our customers and their customers. So if you're aligned with those trends, the core technology investments you put in place eventually pay off, and the customers start coming to you for the right solutions if they know you've built that domain expertise in that area. So I would rather see it as being driven by those trends and us making those choices than a much more reactive approach that we might have had in the past.
I'd say in that particular area, Tori, more and more of the engagement is early, and it tends to be about the capability that we've got versus what the customer is looking for. So it's a much earlier engagement. And, you know, we have to get ahead. We have to have the capabilities ahead of the need. And that's, I think, what Yusuf is describing here.
Just, you know, operating margins, the range is a bit wide. But could you just maybe walk us through what gets you to the low end and the high end? And then maybe just a more philosophical question. At the high end of this range, do you think semis as an industry is structurally over-earning? Or do you think there are reasons why, you know, folks like you all and several of your peers are at these ranges of operating margins and free cash flows?
Go ahead
take
on the
first
yeah,
one.
You go
yeah,
the first.
Okay. We spent too much time together, Vince. We already know which
yeah,
questions we're going to answer.
Finish
now.
Each other's sentences.
Okay, so yeah, look, on the operating margin range, I think if you dial in everything we just gave you, I think over the next 5 years, you're likely to get to the higher end of that range, to the 45% on margin range. But, you know, we give you guys a range, and so you don't have to manage us every quarter. But I think that's a reasonable range, you know, given that I think about it as more of a progression, Charles, than just simply, you know, overnight we're going to flip on a switch. So I think as you think about the progression over the next 3 to 5 years, those are the types of margins that you should expect to see from us. Okay. So
I think there are kind of two parts to the kind of operating margin optimization. I think one, you know, our innovation value is increasing. We're getting more ASP as a company. LTC was getting more and more ASP as well, so that's helped. And I think from our perspective as well, the markets in which we're playing enable us to get the kind of long-term returns that we expect. Also, I think just in terms of the consolidation in the industry over the past 5 years or so, stabilizes things. It gives the consolidators more buying power, more selling power. So I think that helps, at least on the margins.
Consolidation and margins have gone down, not up. So consolidation by itself doesn't necessitate...
No, that's right. I think you that gets you so far, and then you reach your terminal limit. But you have to innovate. You've got to be able to grow.
So it looks like we are done. Well, listen, thank you very much. We really appreciate you all coming out, specifically given all of these weather patterns, and it's just been very tough for a lot of folks. So we really appreciate you coming out. So just in terms of how we're managing the rest of the day, we're going to go down and have lunch, which is if you just come out of here and take a left. We'll have lunch, and then about 30 to 40 minutes later, we'll start with the product demos, which are just close by there as well. And the rest of the day is really up to how you choose to spend it. We're here all day. We'll have our products here. We'll have our engineers, both from ADI and Linear. And the day is yours. So seize the day.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you.